This is Power Players with Dan Clark.
Hi, it's Dan Clark, Power Players with Dan Clark podcast, hosted here at the Sinclair Broadcast Group, KUTV Studio, Salt Lake City, Utah. With my podcast, I've had the opportunity, the privilege of a lifetime, to get to know these immersive Utah student athletes from the inside out. What it's like to be them off the court. What's it like to deal with fame and potential fortune as a result of their athleticism, but more importantly, what we've celebrated in every single one of these interviews is the incredible character, the class, the sophisticated elegance and polished professionalism of these amazing student athletes. And today, episode, pull out your yellow pad and pen if you're a parent, if you're a mom or dad, and you want to know how to raise the most outstanding young person on the planet. Kennedy McQueen, isn't that a cool name? She sounds like she should be at the Oscars tonight just saying, hello, thank you so much. It's been a ride. This podcast episode is brought to you by Berkshire Hathaway. If you're in need of a brand new home or perhaps a luxury second home up in the Park City, Deer Valley area, they take care of us in an extraordinary, first-class, sophisticated, elegant way. Berkshire Hathaway supporting our University of Utah student athletes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But let's talk, because I'm a proud Ute, played football and baseball at the University of Utah, went to East High, and every time I get a chance to meet someone who actually grew up in the mountains of Utah, who understands our culture, who understands our commitment, who understands our love of basketball, even though I played football and baseball, Kennedy is from Hennifer, Utah, went to North Summit High School. She was a three-time All-State basketball player and also was All-State as a volleyball player. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
And North Summit High School in Hennifer is good country. I think you have access to a lake. You have access to good hunting, fishing, good clean air.
Yep, all of it.
So let's take us back to where in the world you grew up. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have an older brother and older sister.
Are they athletes like you?
Yes, my brother played college for a year or two, and then he was in love, so he couldn't do the distance, so he came back.
That's just wrong. Suddenly you turned my podcast into eHarmony. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I'm trying to focus in on athleticism. Come on, Kennedy. Okay, so he bailed because he fell in love.
Right.
How sad is that formula?
Awful.
Should have loved the game.
Awful. And then, yeah, my sister was a heck of an athlete, but didn't do anything in college. And then, yeah, sibling-wise. Yeah,
both. So your parents, are your parents athletes?
Yes, my mom played basketball at the University of Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was her maiden name?
Brooks. But she was married, I want to say her sophomore or junior year. So it was Melanie Brooks McQueen.
Very cool.
Yep. So then my dad actually was the manager for the women's basketball team. They were high school sweethearts, middle school sweethearts, actually. So they were in love way before then. But
so it's not like he was creeping around the jerseys. Stalking her. That's just good to know.
Yeah, had to clarify.
What a class guy. This is good to know. So let's take us back to your youth. When did you discover that you had these extraordinary basketball skills? So you're a guard.
Right.
But what the scouting report is a four-star athlete. It ranked 18th in the country. She was the Utah Gatorade Player of the Year. That's pretty extraordinary, my friend. So cool. So
Thank
cool.
You.
But yet the scouting report is that you're tough. The scouting report is that you're ultra extremely competitive. Like someone says, you can't do it, and you're like, oh, yeah, watch me.
Right, right.
Like, you know, I love quotes. You know, I would, if I put a quote on you, if I had a caption of you in some action shot in the game, I would probably put, it is not enough to say I will do my best. We must succeed in doing that which is necessary. So you're feared as an opponent, feared by your opponents, because they have to guard you against your shooting, But more importantly, they have to guard against your tenacity. 53 steals? Are you serious?
Right, yeah. My mom was a huge defensive focus when she was here. She holds the record, I think, still for steals in a game.
And so you had that emphasis on your life growing up.
You're right, yeah.
Defense, defense.
Exactly. She taught me the importance of defense from day one. And in high school, year by year, I started to buy into it. But once I got into college, I'm like, defense is extremely important.
Isn't that cool? When I've interviewed Michael Jordan, that was one of the things that he said changed his whole game.
Right.
He came in as an offensive threat, offensive threat, offensive threat, and finally he won the defensive player of the year, focused on his defense, right. Focused on his steals, on his anticipation, and he said that's what took his game to the highest level.
Right, and I couldn't agree more. Just learning from my mom, and obviously that's how I think she had to start getting playing time in college, was all on the defensive end, and then she figured it out offensively as well and became a good scorer and facilitator. But defensively, she taught me from freshman year, Ken, if you want to see the floor, you got to play on both ends, but especially on defense.
So is that great advice for anybody? If you don't happen to have the handle right now with your ball skills, you can make your way onto the starting lineup. You can at least become that sixth person. I don't know if we call it sixth man in right. women's basketball, right. but we know what I'm talking about, that first person off the bench who changes the dynamics, changes the energy on the court so that you would have the reputation. I'm going to put Kennedy on their best player or their best shooter.
Right,
yeah. Do you get that assignment often?
Yeah, I do. I can't remember a game starting sophomore year and then this year that I haven't had that job to shut down the other guard, best guard on the other team. And it's hard in the Pac-12. You're playing against when you're guarding the other team's best player in the Pac-12. And it's the best women's basketball conference.
Absolutely, it is.
In the country. So when you have that assignment, it's tough. It's tough.
This podcast episode is brought to you by the amazing Berkshire Hathaway, longtime supporter of University of Utah student athletes. Talk to us about how you win games, or if you believe you win games with defense, not offense.
Yeah, I think just learning that, it took me a while, like I said, to learn that in high school. But by senior year, I started to realize that my mom knew what she was talking about, coach knew what she was talking about. And so then when I got to college and realizing that I wasn't the most skilled offensive player there anymore, everyone's just as good as me. And being from where I'm from, I was just used to being so above everybody else. It was a shock a little bit.
For those of you who don't know where Hennifer is, there were 11 people in her town, so they miss her tonight. They're like, where's Kennedy?
No, we hate it
when
10.
She left. I can't believe it.
So just learning that if I want to see some time on the court this year, a lot of it has to come from defense, and I earned it. Defense, having the job of guarding the best player from the moment I stepped on a college floor, and then just being able to learn that I was always taught that defense was just hard work. And, yeah, that's a lot of it, but there's actually a lot of technique to it that I've had to learn since being in college. And once you kind of start figuring that out and all the different coverages and learning the player you're guarding, it takes a lot of film. You got to watch really
that's
close.
True. So that's we were talking about that as a football player, we watched film. And as an outside linebacker, defensive end, I knew what player I was going against, and I knew his strengths. Right. I could see if he crossed his legs instead of stepping with the outside foot, he would cross his legs, which means now I had the competitive advantage. I could pancake right. him because he didn't have that lower center of gravity. So when you watch film, can you actually scout them that they're stronger to the left than they are to the right? This is where they usually post up, or this, you know, they'll go to the elbow, that this is where this person actually is an awesome 12 to 15 foot DeMar DeRozan type player who always shoots it from that mid range. And you know that going into the game, so you can shut them down, kind of overplay them to the left or overplay them to the right, or teach us about the mindset of preparing, getting the competitive advantage watching film and basketball.
Right, for sure. Like I said, when you're going against the best player in the Pac-12 conference, they're good and they're the best player on their team for a reason, and it takes a lot of talent to get there. Starting in film, our coaches do a great job at coming up with a scouting report, has all the players' breakdowns of what are they right-hand or left-handed, can they finish going both ways, are they way better going right, like what are the percentage differences, when they come off screens, their go-to move, Or so we'll be in a specific screen coverage depending on which player it is. If we don't want them to even be able to, like if they're a really good playmaker, we don't even want to let them use the screen. Make them get the ball out of their hands. So just little details like that that you really have to hone into. Then I would watch film of myself in high school, but like I didn't have team film. Even in club, I don't remember watching a ton of film. So being in college, I'm like, wow, I already know who I'm going against before I even get there. Like instead of just knowing their name, I know what they do, how they play, what their strengths are. So yeah, learning that, it's definitely an advantage going into the game.
So in league play, you always play the team twice,
right?
Once at home, once away. So do you find that you learn from the first game that you can apply to the second game? You know, statistically, you would think you would be better, a better defender, a better offensive shooter, a better playmaker, having played against that person before. Is that the case, or do they change up their game too to kind of keep the competitive advantage against you? Is it kind of a cat and mouse opportunity the whole year?
Right. I think both players are going to make changes. If they didn't score as well that game, they'll see where coach will watch film with them and say you could have scored here and there and what to do there. But then I also have to know I overplayed this way and they could have taken advantage of me that way but didn't. So it's just kind of learning those differences and how I can adjust that. And basketball is hard. There's so many counter moves. So if you stop one, every good player is going to have a counter to the counter. So it's just you got to always be ready for that. And good players, I mean, my coach, Coach Rob, always says that good offense beats good defense. So at the end of the day, that's what's been kind of hard for me to understand is if they score – and if I did everything I can, it's still like, coach, like I'm frustrated. I did everything I can and they still scored. I played it exactly how we said. So just learning that the balance between, okay, don't get frustrated. They're the best on their team for a reason. They're a top player in the toughest conference. But also, okay, learn from your mistake the last play and don't let it happen again. Make them do something else. So, yeah, just learning that balance.
So coming out of high school, did you get recruited from other schools?
Yeah, for sure. I think – I don't remember how many offers I had, but it was over 25, somewhere
and
around
which,
there.
Which were some of the flagship programs that we would recognize?
Yeah, Texas Tech, Gonzaga, BYU. Wow, I haven't had to think about these in a minute. But there was a lot of good programs in there, Washington, just a lot of great programs like that. But in my heart, since my mom played at the U, I grew up a diehard Utah fan.
Atta girl.
Everything I did was just Utah, Utah, Utah. We went to football games, all men's and women's basketball games. We were always at the U for some sporting event, it felt like. So even though it was really tough to choose between Utah and Gonzaga, I did struggle with that for a while. But I'm a big family person, love Utah, and have the opportunity to play in the Pac-12. Like, why would I leave? It's everything
exactly.
I'd wanted. So, yeah, everyone kind of knew it was going to come down to Utah. They didn't think it was hard, but inside it felt really hard. I would wake up one day and be Gonzaga, and I'd be like, but Ken, it's Utah. Like, you can't go away from
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I agree.
Right.
We're so grateful you chose to be
Ute. Me too.
Because even if you were in Gonzaga uniform, you'd probably have, like, red and white on underneath.
Right, right. Know? Yep, through and through. Yep.
You can't let it go. So let's get personal. So what's your pregame like? What do you do mentally and physically to get ready on a game day?
Yeah, something new that I've started doing this year. Actually, towards the beginning of the year, I went through a bit of a shooting slump, and I've never experienced something like it felt like no matter what I did in practice on my own, shooting all my shots on the shooting machine, I would never miss. And it's like I get to games, and I'm like 0 for 3 on 3, and then 0 for 4 the next game. I'm like, what's happening? And it went on for, I want to say, 3-4 weeks. Just
so you're in a shooting slump. She's really famous for the three-pointer. She's got range. You do. You have good range. So all of a sudden you're launching these shots that usually go in and suddenly they
felt
don't.
Perfect and they just didn't. So something I was able to take advantage of that the U does a great job at is our sports psychologist.
Yeah.
It's not me. I knew everything. The form felt great. I would shoot the same way I did in practice on the gun as I did in the game. My mentality felt the same. And he just worked with me and, like, Kennedy, like, Steph Curry goes through things like this. Like, all the greats go through it. And this is your first time experiencing. Like, I've had a bad shooting game, but never not many games straight like that. That was new for me. So he taught me a whole little thing that just a lot of visualization and doing that the night before a game, the day of the game, right before I go out. So I visualize now. I at least three times before I enter the
court. Visualize what? Making the shot. The right. ball actually going through the net.
Right, and it started with just imagining the shots I get in games and just seeing nothing but it swishing, touching no rim. And then, like, you kind of imagine just yourself at first, and then you kind of bring in your teammates and the crowd. And then so you're already putting yourself in that environment before you're even there. And now I'm to the point that I imagine everything. Like, if I'm coming off a pick and roll and I draw two, I dish it off. Like, I've started to expand a little bit of making the reads in my head. So then when they happen in a game, it feels like I've already been there.
So it's like total court awareness. Right. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been able to incorporate that into my pregame. And then there's usually a pregame nap in there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
So do you take pride in what you do without the ball, kind of playing without the ball?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially in college, you're going to have your go-to players, and everyone needs to stay ready. So when the ball is in someone else's hands, you got to be ready. And we've had a saying this year, find the window, not the door. Because a few times, feels like you're open and you're like ball, but to the person trying to pass it, your defender's right there or a defender's in the way. So learning this year to really find those open windows. And ever since I've started learning that, it's like teams know I'm a good shooter, so I don't get a lot of off-the-dribble threes anymore coming off screens. So just learning to move, and I think I keep coming back to Steph Curry, but he's just such a good example of moving without the ball. I mean, everyone knows he's the world's greatest shooter, and he still gets threes.
Yeah.
So just kind of learning that how he has learned to move without the ball. And, I mean, you got to stay within our offense, obviously. I don't have free range like Steph Curry does, but just learning those little things like finding the open window and little things like that make a big difference.
So I've spoken at 5 Final Fours.
Okay.
And the women's Final Four in San Jose back in the day when Purdue won the national championship. And so as a cut and dried Crimson supporter, we would have the basketball team over to our house.
Okay.
Michael Doliak. Keith Van Horn, your AAU coach.
Yep.
What did you learn from Keith? Because he was the male version of you, and the next time you see him, you tell him Dan Clark said that you are Keith Van Horn because he could shoot the three, he could take it inside, and he was an incredible defender. I know his leaping ability, his vertical helped him on that, but I've tried to figure out who I would compare you with, and it had to be Keith Van Horn. I hope that's a compliment to you.
Yeah, it is.
Because if you watch his game, he had it all. He had all phases just like you do.
Right.
So what's something that he emphasized as an AAU coach for those of us who knew Keith and had him over for dinner a few times, you know?
Yeah, I think just my biggest takeaway from him, obviously he was great at teaching skills and just learning where playing basketball at North Summit, you can only do so much. So just learning, like, we didn't have all these different defenses, like defensive schemes or different pick-and-roll coverages. A lot of times we were zoning, and in college it's like we hardly ever zone. It feels like everyone plays man-to-man. So then when I got there and just learning those little techniques, and it was frustrating. I've just gotten away with little things that I didn't think mattered because it was easy to do in two-way basketball,
yeah,
right? So once I got in the Nike circuit with Keith, he was patient and just he knew how good I was going to be even when I couldn't see it. And just something I learned from him is just his competitive drive. I think that's what separates him and why he had so much success as a basketball player. He's just so competitive. He took every drill so seriously, even if it was just the four-on-four shell drill that we still do in college. When coach says that, there are some players that are like, oh, not shell drill again. But him, he was like, shell drill, let's go, you know?
So he was coached by Majerus, obviously, who I would go to practice. And if you could deal with his language, you would realize that he was just a fundamental guy. He would have people, he would have his players take shot after shot after shot after shot after shot just to make sure their feet were pointing straight at the basket and everything fundamentally was sound.
Right.
So Keith played with Andre Miller and, you know, Doliak and the gang. And I was at that Final Four when we took Kentucky to the hoop. I think we were up 19 at halftime, and then we lost because we didn't have a bench. Everybody ran out of gas.
Right.
That's the only reason why we lost.
Right.
Only reason. So let's talk about the team concept, your bench. Why the Ute women's team is so extraordinary. They got you were ranked third in the country until Wazoo kind of broke your heart.
Yep.
But my question is based on the Mamba mentality of a Kobe Bryant. One of his interviews that I think is so phenomenal was, Kobe, it's 3-on-1, you're going down. Why don't you pass it to a teammate? Why do you always keep the ball? And he said, why should I pass it to somebody who doesn't work as hard as I do?
Right.
Why should I pass it to a teammate who's not in the gym early and stays late like I do?
Right.
He even threw Shaq under the bus. Shaq would have been the greatest center who ever lived, but he was lazy. You know, if he had to work as hard as I did, Kobe said,
right,
he could have clearly been the very best, if he's not one of the very best, obviously. So let's talk about your leadership off the court, your leadership on the court. As a young sophomore, or as you would say in basketball years, you're like 97. I can't remember what you told me off air. But it was like dog years. Yeah, I'm actually 42 when I take the court. You're such a piece of work. But I want to know your work ethic, the reputation you have. Are you, can you handle it, what people are saying behind your back?
Yeah, for sure.
That you make everybody better.
Yeah, for
sure. What a great compliment. You make those you play against better.
Right.
That's the Michael Jordan. That's the mom. That's it. So how do you inspire your fellow teammates to work as hard as you do, to take it as serious as you do?
Yeah, I think that started in high school. I started developing that. Just knowing that where I went to high school, everyone plays the same sports. Everyone does everything. So the people I played volleyball with, most of the people would I played basketball with 2 weeks later when that season started. So just developing from that age in high school that I can only be as good to us a team success as the people are around me as well. Like, one person can only do so much, and I had to learn that in high school. No matter how much work I put in, at the end of the day, when I'm being triple teamed and I make the right play, I need someone to be able to finish the playoff, because there's only so much one person can do. So learning that in college, when you're surrounded by all these great, great teammates, it's like when you see another teammate in the gym, it makes you want to be in the gym.
Yeah.
It's just contagious when you get to this level, and that's what was different between high school and here. No matter how much I preached in high school, there are some people that just didn't have the love for basketball, and that's okay. But here, everyone has the same goal, and we're reaching that with after the selection show. We're a 2 seed, and that comes from every day when I would see Gianna in the gym. It's, Kennedy, you get in the gym again, you know? Like, it just makes everyone want to be better. And so just being that example for people around me too. And we've talked on the defensive side. I try every time in practice to take every defensive drill just as seriously. We just took our offensive segment that we went over, just hoping to make that contagious. I think just being that example, I'm more of a lead by example rather than voice. I've always been that way, but my greatest examples I can think of in basketball led by example too. I can't remember much of what they said, but I know how they played, and I knew I wanted to be just like it.
Okay, so you epitomized the answer to my question, because when I said, do you want to know what people say behind your back, and I was trying to yank your chain to see if you would go, I don't know. You looked at me like, yeah. Like, I know what they're going to say behind my back.
I do.
Know. Because you work so hard. I know. That's so cool.
Right.
So cool.
Right.
So cool. I've quoted this on air before, but under pressure, you don't rise to the occasion. You fall to your level of training.
Right.
You know, an armored-up warrior never has to get ready. She stays ready.
Right.
Give me the ball.
Right.
I know exactly what I'm doing. Okay, so let's talk. You ready?
Ready.
Sports psychology.
Okay, ready.
So Utah used to be a men's basketball school.
Correct.
And we've kind of fallen off the map, and now we're coming back. We're rebuilding. The program, but you women brought us back to national fame and fortune. Thank
right.
you so much. We honor you. And to have 10,000 screaming fans at the Huntsman Center in one of your games shows you people are starting to
yeah.
catch on. This isn't just football and gymnastics. We're so proud of you. So here's what I want to know.
Okay.
So you rank third in the country. You kick the Shimoli, whatever that means in Australian, out of Stanford.
Right.
You know exactly what I'm going to ask you now. I can see your eyes. And 48 hours later, I don't know how many hours later, you lose to Washington State.
Nope, it's coming.
Okay, so let's talk. How does that happen? Is it really an emotional? Everybody says, oh, Tennessee rose to the occasion and beat Alabama. It was so emotionally draining, drip dry. There's no way they could ever bring out kind of emotion in the next game. And Tennessee rises to the top of NCAA football rankings, and then all of a sudden they just get beat by everybody. Toadsec Ferry, Arkansas, the School of the Blind, and I'm just kidding you, but everybody's just whooping them.
Right.
And you say, wait a second, what happened? What's the psychology behind it? So teach us, what happened against Washington State? Clearly you were a better team. Right. And you knew you were, but you lost. What happened? Teach us.
Yeah, I think what's been hard sometimes this season that we've continued to have to learn, and we'll learn at some point. We have no seniors on this team, and that's not an excuse, but that's we have so much experience from last year, but we have a lot of new players this year that we brought in and need to adapt to that and our level of intensity that we play with. So when we approach that game, I think we just kind of thought we've already beat them twice. But then there were some people being like, it's hard to beat a team three times. So then it's kind of like, okay, where's our mindset? You know, instead of, I think that's why the Stanford game was so successful, is after we lost at their place, we knew when we saw that we were playing them, because we've had the 1-0 mentality all season.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as we got the scouting report for Stanford, it was, we're winning this game. There was no doubt you could look in anybody's eyes that we knew we were winning tomorrow night.
I'm getting goosebumps.
We knew we were winning tomorrow night. So when we won that game, it wasn't shocking. Like, I knew going into that game that we were going to win. We had a great game plan. Everyone was so locked in. And it just didn't feel like that level of intensity as we approached Washington State. And so that's been my biggest takeaway, and something that I can use my leadership role in to starting this weekend, that when we play Gardner, whatever the
– I know.
Think of it.
You can't take it for granted. You can't look past them. Yeah.
Exactly. But, yeah, we have to approach that. We're only guaranteed 40 more minutes. That's it. No, we're playing a – are they a six
– doesn't matter.
Whatever seed they are. Someone can easily be thinking, what are you thinking of NC State? What are you thinking of Princeton? But we have to keep that want-to-know mentality and can't keep looking ahead, because we saw in the Washington State game, when you don't come ready, it's easily taken away, even when you are the better team, even when you should win that game. So I think we just need to show up with that mentality that we did for Stanford. It's easy to get fired up for Stanford, but now we're in postseason. It should be easy to get fired up for every game, I feel like. Just using that mentality.
Okay, so I was hurt playing football. And it ended my career. And a lot of people said, Clark, you should coach. That'll help you deal with the pain and the broken heart, the shattered dreams, the paralyzed injury. And I couldn't coach because it dawned on me that once the game starts, the coach is stuck on the sideline.
Right.
So it took me like 2 or 3 years before I realized, okay, now I want to get back involved in the game.
Right.
So as a leader on the floor, somebody has to make a play. Coaches can call timeout as many times as they can possibly have, but unless somebody steps up on the court to make a move, it ain't going to change the game, right?
Right.
So during NBA All-Star weekend, I had a chance to sit down with Reggie Miller, the NBA all-time clutch shooter, in my opinion, I think.
Right.
And I was asking him, I mean, if you look at it, there's a whole focused – almost mini documentary on him. I think he scored like 15 points in, 8 seconds or something to win the game. I can't even remember. I should have looked it up before I talked to you, because you remind me of him as well. But he told me that he took it upon himself. It's like Michael Jordan, why do you want the ball in the last 4 minutes of the game? I asked him. He says, because I've worked harder than anybody on the court, no matter who it is. I know I have. So can you do as a leader? What can you do as a guard? What can you do as this amazing all-around complete player to change the momentum on the court when we see that it's changing? You know, I mean, how many times have we seen just lately the NBA teams, somebody's ahead by 27 points, Dallas,
right,
and they lose the game.
Right.
And they have Kyrie and they have everybody else, Luka,
right,
and they lose. So I really want to pick your brain. This is such an honor to have you on this podcast. Think for a second. How can you take back the momentum? How can you shift it? Obviously, defense, if you stop them, you can come back. We know that. But teach us a little bit more about what you have to do on the court, because the coach is stuck on the sideline.
Right. I think it's come back to what we've already touched on a little bit, but just knowing that hard work you put in. You said multiple quotes by some of the greats, that when you know you've put in so much work and you've practiced that shot that the coach draws up, or in our offense, we all, like, coming down stretches of games, especially this year, we just stick in our flow offense, because that's when we're best, when we're just moving the ball, and whoever the ball ends up with, defense is going to break down, and we can trust everyone on our team to make a play. I think that's what makes us so good. You never know who's going to get that shot. It could be anyone. So just knowing that we're probably going to go
into our... you're the only one that shoots from 50 feet.
Right, correct. So just knowing...
Steph. Steph. Just trying to put it in perspective.
Right. So just when I... Personally, when I get the ball in my hands and when we're in our just motion offense, I know I'm going to make the right play. And to me and how our system is designed, it's, okay, if I have the shot, I know my teammates and my coach trust me to take it, and I know I've put in so much work shooting that if I have that open three, I'm going to knock it down. I've practiced that situation over and over again in high school, had so many opportunities for game winners and taking advantage of those, and each one gives you more and more confidence. So. Yeah. So when you get the chance in college, like, I'm really excited for that moment. I know I'm ready. So, but I also know I can trust my teammates when it's in their hands too, which is really nice. It's not that pressure like it was in high school. But even if it was, like, I'm excited for it. And I think that's, you kind of touched on, like, why the great players are so great. They're excited for those moments. They're not backing down. And I just think learning from my parents, they instilled that in me from Kennedy, you've worked harder than anyone you go against, like, want the ball. And it took a little bit to transfer that over to college just because being from a small town and you have all that talk and all these players went to these big, big high schools in California that everyone just knows where the top recruits come from. And that wasn't me. I was known nationally but also didn't go to those top schools. So it was like North Summit, where is that? You know, in Utah, where in Utah is that? Like, even people from Utah don't even know where Hennifer is. Like, it's pretty rare when I run into a person that knows that. So just, that could have easily shaken my confidence. But instead, it was like, I'll show you where North Summit is by how I play, you know? So, just learning in those moments, just when if I have the opportunity to make a play, I'm going to make the right play. It might not always be that last second shot. It might be a dump off or the kick to the open person in the corner, and that just comes back to trusting my teammates. I know whoever I dish it off to.
Okay, last couple of questions. So what's your favorite food? What's your favorite music? Are you the Michael Phelps listening to tunes before the game so you can go out there and slam dunk it from, you know?
Right. I am a big music fan, but before games, honestly, I visualize, nap, change, and then I get my ankles taped, and then I go down to the and music's already playing, so I don't have like this playlist. I did in high school. I had a playlist I listened to before every game, but I've changed that. It just had a bunch of rap on it, just a bunch of fire, nothing specific, just a bunch of like, let's go, you know, fire up. But and favorite food, hands down, a crispy chicken sandwich. From my small town, there is the best chicken place. It's called the Chicken Inn.
I've eaten there many times.
It's amazing. It's That's amazing, so and it's my favorite.
First speech I ever gave after when I started becoming a professional speaker was at Morgan High School.
Really? Wow.
They have a Chicken Inn right there, too.
Yeah, they do. That's the Chicken Inn.
See, I know exactly
right there.
Where you grew
That's
up.
The one I'm talking about.
I've seen all nine guys that you dated.
Yeah, right there. They're probably, actually.
Okay, so I want you to look in the camera and give us your very best sales pitch, serve pitch, on why every young woman in the country should come and play basketball at the University of Utah. Why we travel so well, and you watch how many screaming fans there's going to be at the Huntsman Center, and it's just the beginning. We thank you so much for bringing basketball back to Utah as a championship team,
right.
And it's so cool that it's the women's team that's leading the
right.
the charge. So just, you know, maybe. Rip at the heart of every mom and dad out there who want the best experience for their student athlete child on the planet, why they should come to Utah, because I am a cut and dried Ute, and I can tell you are too.
Right. A big reason for me why I came to Utah is just we had everyone committed in our circle had the same vision. And I think that's what made the biggest difference for us when you're surrounded by people that come from different backgrounds and different personalities, but all have the same goal in the end. It's really dangerous. So when you get into a program that everyone wants the best for each other, from the staff clerk down to the last person off the bench, when everyone wants the same thing, it's awesome. And we care about each other off the court and on the court. And we're not all the same. We have multiple different personalities all throughout the team. But when you all have the same goal, like I said before, it's dangerous. And I think that's why we're on the rise, and it's going to continue to do so.
Thanks. It's Kennedy McQueen. How do we follow you on social media? How do we join your tribe? How can we get involved to support you in the NIL experience? Name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, all my social media is just at Kennedy underscore McQueen. So simple enough.
Twitter, everything.
Yeah, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Instagram. I'm not that. I watch TikTok. I don't make TikTok.
It's just so funny. I love it.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you for actually saying that. It's good. This podcast episode is brought to you by Berkshire Hathaway, the most extraordinary real estate company in the Intermountain West, bringing you the greatest customer service, Deer Valley, Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and Bountiful. Anything else you want to say? This is a great interview. You're such a charming young woman. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
You're so smart. You're so sharp. So competitive. You're everything I heard you were.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's Dan Clark, Power Players. Support our youth student athletes, especially our women's basketball team as they enter in the NCAA tournament. And even though this podcast is evergreen, you remember this year, you remember the podcast interviews I've had with the Lady Utes, and especially this episode with Kennedy McQueen. What an amazing human being you are.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Go Utes.
Go Utes.
The views and opinions expressed on the Power Players podcast do not necessarily reflect those of KUTV or Sinclair Broadcast Group.